First Take, your take on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, Sirius XM, Channel 80, and ESPN News. Heck, if you want to be super fancy, you could just ask your smart speakers to play ESPN Radio. All of those devices get you to us. I'm Jason Fitz, and we start the show as we do every single day with the headlines that you need to know. We'll start with a little bit of golf. PGA Championship will go forward at Harding Park minus fans. So the first major championship to be contested in 2020, the PGA Championship, will be played at San Francisco's Harding Park, but will be done without spectators. The PGA of America announced the decision Monday after spending months considering other scenarios, including moving the tournament to other venues. They've decided to stick with the original site for the rescheduled tournament to be played August 6th through the 9th. The PGA, remember, had been originally scheduled for May 14th through 17th, but was postponed because of the coronavirus. So at this point, we know it's going to go forward in San Francisco with no fans. Speaking of with no fans, all eyes are on the NBA, but some players may decide that it's not worth playing, including Washington Wizards forward Davis Bertans, who arguably could be in the running for the most improved player candidate for the 2019-20 season, has decided to sit out the NBA's restart in Orlando as a preventative measure. He's 27. He's about to get paid, and he does have two previous ACL injuries. So as an organization, the Wizards fully supportive of his decision to stay back from the league's 22-team restart, remains determined to sign him in free agency. So a good move by him to decide that he's going to protect his cash. I have absolutely zero problems with that. And lastly, on the headlines that you need to know, racing icon Richard Petty will attend Monday's NASCAR Cup Series race at Talladega Super Speedway to stand in solidarity with Buster Wallace. Bubba Wallace. Sources have told ESPN's Marty Smith. I'm all over the place. Petty decided to travel to the Alabama Super Speedway after a noose was found in Wallace's garage stall on Sunday. We're going to get into that a lot, but a big moment here is Richard Petty and many other drivers are preparing to stand with Bubba Wallace. Those are the headlines that you need to know. First Take, your take, 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. That's how you get in on the fun conversation. 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. You can also tweet me at Jason Fitz. I want to get your take on all things First Take today. You've got a lot that you're going to hear from the First Take panel, and we'll start with some Straight Talk. Straight Talk Wireless doesn't play games. Get the unlimited plan with 25 gigs of high-speed data, then 2G for just $45 a month. Saves you up to 50% against the big carriers. No contracts, no compromise. Savings may vary. See terms and conditions at straighttalk.com. Now, the Straight Talk comes in the form of what we were just talking about. NASCAR says a noose was found in Bubba Wallace's garage at Talladega less than 2 weeks after Wallace led efforts to push NASCAR's ban of the Confederate flag, which they did. NASCAR has released the following statement, quote, late this afternoon, NASCAR was made aware that a noose was found in the garage stall of the 43 team. We are angry and outraged and cannot state strongly enough how seriously we take this heinous act. We've launched an immediate investigation and will do everything we can to identify the person or persons responsible and eliminate them from the sport. As we have stated unequivocally, there is no place for racism in NASCAR, and this act only strengthens our resolve to make the sport open and welcoming to all. Also, I want you to hear what Bubba Wallace said. He went to Twitter, put out a statement which read, in part, today's despicable act of racism and hatred leaves me incredibly saddened and serves as a painful reminder of how much further we have to go as a society and how persistent we must be in the fight against racism. As my mother told me today, they are just trying to scare you. This will not break me. I will not give in, nor will I back down. I will continue to proudly stand for what I believe in. Now, as we know, according to breaking and more recent information to ESPN, the FBI is going to be involved in this investigation as everyone tries to get to the bottom of exactly what happened, how it happened, who's responsible for it. First Take had plenty to say about it as they talked about how damaging the noose incident is involving Bubba Wallace for the overall reputation of NASCAR.
The sanctioning body and its executive level have spent this entire morning pouring through what surveillance footage they have in the garage, chatting with members of Bubba Wallace's team to try to get to the bottom of who this was. Now, just so you know, because of COVID-19, the access to the garage is greatly restricted compared to what it would be without a pandemic. We're working at about one-third of the amount of people within the garage area that we would see without a COVID-19 pandemic. And the people that have access to the garage are, for example, team members of the Cup Series teams, officials of the sport, safety personnel, firemen, law, security, and maybe some cleaning staffs that would be in charge of cleaning up and cleaning out the garage areas. Fans are not allowed. There were some 5,000 fans allowed here yesterday. It's the first time since the COVID-19 pandemic halted the sport that paying fans were welcome back to the racetrack, but they didn't have access to the garage. So I can't say unequivocally you can remove them from the equation, but I think you can say 99%, maybe even more than that, that you can remove them from this equation. So that's one of the most troubling parts of this, is that there is potential that it was someone in the sport. My prayer personally is that it was not a hard card, annual credential carrying member of the sport, because that would be all the more disgusting. This is despicable. This is disgusting. This is abhorrent. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Stephen.
I said thank you for being on the show. Listen, before I ask my follow-up question, when you say a hard carrying member, for those out there who don't know much about NASCAR, explain exactly what that means when you say you hope that it's not a hard carrying member. What do you mean by that?
Good morning, brother. This is what that's like NASCAR lingo for an annual credential. That is someone who is credentialed for the entire season by the sanctioning body, by NASCAR. And that would be folks like me, okay, who are members of the media who cover the sport regularly. That would be crew members and crew chiefs and drivers. And that's actually, Stephen, one other great example of how restricted the garage area is. The drivers don't even have access to it. The drivers are walking from their motor homes that they live in, their homes on wheels, straight to their race cars to drive the cars. They're not going in the garage area. So that gives you an idea of how restricted this is.
I wanted to follow up with this question. I understand that, you know, from a symbolic gesture, you know, you see something like this left in Bubba Wallace's locker. Obviously, you want to find out who that is and you want to eradicate them from the sport. I get all of that. But I take it as a more palpable threat. They're saying if we get our hands on you, if we catch you, we're going to do something to you. I want to know, do you get the impression that is how NASCAR is embracing this situation? And what are they doing, if anything at all, to make sure that Bubba Wallace is protected? Because obviously he's a huge target right now.
Indeed. And I will tell you quickly, I'll get to your point of an immediate threat in just a moment. But this is a very interesting thing that I've just learned from industry sources right before we came on. Richard Petty, who drove the iconic 43 car to 200 wins and 7 championship, and is probably the most iconic face and figure in the history of the sport. He has not been at the racetrack, Stephen, since COVID-19 halted all of sports. Mr. Petty is 82 years old, so he stayed at home. Well, he's coming today. He's coming today to stand beside Darrell Wallace in solidarity. And I'm told by those sources that what the King said was this: the most important thing right now for me is hugging my driver. And I don't think he's alone. I have not confirmed what the pre-race ceremonies might look like, but I can tell you this. I have a really good idea that we're going to see a show of solidarity for Bubba Wallace that's going to be moving and really show where this sport is. Now, let me get back to your original question here, all right? NASCAR is not going to take this crap anymore. And I'll tell you why I feel like this is another landmark moment in this progressive movement. In the past, if this would have happened, I can't sit here and tell you that I know NASCAR even would have announced it. Bubba Wallace never saw the noose. A member of his team saw it. That member of the team reported that he'd seen it, and then it went to NASCAR. NASCAR's senior executive staff had a meeting immediately. They made the decision as a group to put this information out, not sweep it under the rug, not say, hey, we're going to handle this internally. We're going to tell the world this happened, and we're going to get this SOB the hell out of here. And that's what they're doing right now. They're working with the information that they have at their disposal. Talladega has a new garage area. $50 million renovation. So you'd assume there's a lot of cameras in there, man. They're looking at all that now. They're talking to people who might have information, and they're determined to get to the bottom of who or whom this might be and get them out of here.
It's First Take, Your Take on ESPN Radio, ESPN News, presented by Progressive Insurance, and all of our guests appear on the Shell Penzo Performance Line. You could hear the passion in Marty Smith's voice right there when he talks about this. It means so much to him, and it means so much right now to so many people around NASCAR. And one thing he stressed that's important to remember, these are new facilities, which means, as he pointed out, there should be cameras. And all likelihood is this was someone within the NASCAR family, not a fan, but someone within the NASCAR family or someone affiliated with the event in some way. So all eyes are going to be on results and figuring out who's responsible as quickly as possible. ESPN Radio, presented by Progressive Insurance. Quote, home insurance, it just got easier with Progressive's Home Quote Explorer. Quote and buy all online at progressive.com. Let's head over to the Shell Penzo Performance Line, where we're joined by Clinton Yates, the undefeated columnist. Plus, you can hear him with L. Duncan Thursday night, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio on a new show called The Intersection. Clinton, thanks for the time, man. I hope you guys are safe and everything's good in your world, man. What was your reaction when you first heard about the news and Bubba Wallace with NASCAR?
So I got to admit, the news came at a weird time during the day yesterday, because those who were following the race, well, they know that somebody decided to not only do that to Bubba Wallace's locker, but prior to the race ever getting run, well, fly a Skyrider all over the track with a Confederate flag that said defund NASCAR. On top of that, 20 to 25 trucks showed up with their Confederate flags on full display on the way into the Super Speedway. So there was a lot that was going on that day in terms of just like, wow, we're really going to have to take a look at how NASCAR is going to be able to regulate this kind of stuff, because not just from a fan standpoint in terms of the people in the facility, which there obviously were none, but people just in general around using the cameras and the time to take an opportunity to display their, you know, their symbols of hatred. I think that that's going to be as tough as anything. So while the Bubba situation is obviously disgusting, it's almost to me a completely different story than what happened outside of the racetrack, because that's going to be harder to regulate. This is somebody going rogue that I guarantee, as Marty said, they're going to find. But the larger problem here for NASCAR is how able are you to put teeth in what it is that you believe in terms of your fans and the people outside of your racetracks?
So how do they do that, Clinton?
You know, I mean, I the teleconference, there's a NASCAR teleconference happening at the bottom of the hour, in which I think a lot of people are going to ask those questions, including myself. But I think the way you have to do this is by saying that, you know, a couple years ago, they had a policy where they said, if you want to turn in your Confederate flags, we'll give you flags back. Sort of a buyback type of situation that I thought was weird, but it was a decent, show of good faith, if you will. Now they're saying they won't be allowed in. I think you kind of have to go to a position now where it says not only if we find something on you will you get kicked out, but you probably can't come back. And that's the only way that this is going to hold any real water, in my opinion, because otherwise you're just going to run into a situation exactly like this. Some guy wants to fly a plane 3 miles from the stadium, but you can actually see the daggone thing from the TV cameras. That's an issue. And if the road to NASCAR is literally lined with flags, you can't have that. I mean, you simply have to crack down on what is considered acceptable in and around your sport, and you have to do that with access bans. Otherwise, people are going to do this anyway, because the places where these events happen are in localities where obviously people have no problems expressing themselves this way. And that's ultimately what the larger problem is here with NASCAR. Are you going to not only divest yourself from fans, but also affiliated businesses and locales where they're not going to change their minds about that? That's going to be the hard part. It isn't just coming out and saying we don't want the Confederate flag on display. It's saying to every single person, if you condone this, we have to separate ourselves from you too, and that's not easy.
We're talking to Clinton Yates. You can read him, obviously, on The Undefeated. See him all over ESPN, and you can hear him now on a new show called The Intersection with L. Duncan Thursday nights, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio. So, Clinton, when you talk about the Confederate flags that were being flown outside the race, in fairness, as you said, 20 or 25 trucks, right? Yeah. I'm trying to sort of do a cost analysis here on gain versus loss, because I've had this debate with some of the listeners on this show. Some people have called in passionately saying they'll never support NASCAR again. However, I've spent more money in the last 2 weeks on Bubba Wallace gear than I have on NASCAR combined in my entire life. So how big a deal is it for 20 or 25 trucks compared to the audience that they're gaining and the exposure that they're gaining?
It's not a big deal, but ultimately it requires you to have some attention to it because of the people who you are trying to get. If people still feel like I'm trying to get into this game, and I mean that in the psychological sense, not in terms of the physical sense, but I still see these folks every time, I'm going to get turned off. And the gain is very minimal, because this is half the reason why NASCAR wanted to get rid of this element to begin with. Look, I hate to be so crass about this, but the type of person that identifies very strongly with the Confederate flag is broke. they're not adding to NASCAR's bottom line in any way other than sort of cultural cachet, which isn't worth that much to a league this popular at this point. All it does is turn off Fortune 500 companies and like otherwise well-established places that want to do business with NASCAR because a couple, you know, I don't know, self-described rednecks want to decide that they want to fly the stars and bars. Like, they're not gaining nearly as much as they think from this populace. What they're doing is setting off a small but vocal minority of people who are at the grassroots level everywhere they go. That's the issue. It's the depth within which these people are in the culture because they invented it as much as it is the money or anything they're adding to it. So you've got to find a way to try to extricate something that you consider cancerous from your overall stature without crumbling the entire system because that's what it was built on. It's tough.
So, Clinton, let's put our magic glasses on and look to the future. Okay.
Okay.
Now, I'm not good at this. If I could look to the future, I'd win the lottery. But if you had to guess right now, based on the actions you've seen so far in the last few weeks in NASCAR, if you try and extrapolate that forward, when you look at NASCAR in 3 years, what's the sport look like?
I think the sport looks like something where, number one, more people can feel comfortable coming to races. And number two, more people are involved with NASCAR on a level that's not just about drivers. That's one of the things that people fail to realize about why NASCAR is even cool on some level is because there are so many people doing so many different things, whether it's communications in the league office, whether it's track-to-track stuff in terms of how people coordinate the logistics of races, whether or not it's the people in the pits and in the garages who make the cars, change the tires, pump the gas, and mess with the chassis. Those people can all be a part of the system as well. And for black folks and, you know, non-white people to get involved on all levels, not just one of driving, that's going to be, I think, where NASCAR is going to focus and where they should, because that's how you create fans, not just people who want to win. And that's ultimately, I think, what the goal is for NASCAR, is an environment from a fan standpoint that everybody can be a part of. Everybody's going to want to drive race cars no matter what you look like for the rest of time. Whether or not anybody wants to watch anybody else do that, well, that has to do with who else is around them watching and whether or not they feel safe doing it. And NASCAR has to figure that out first.
That's brilliantly said, Clinton. I can't have you and not, like, you are the biggest baseball fan I know, so I gotta ask. I know we're talking NASCAR, but at least gotta ask you, like, where are you right now as a massive baseball guy? You know I'm not a massive baseball guy.
Yeah.
If they get this worked out and you get some games, you good?
Bro, no. I mean, I don't know. I just hope the quality of the baseball is what matters. Like, if they end up getting back a bunch of guys who have to play because they don't have any other choice per their contracts and all, guys who can afford to stay out, that's not going to make for a good product, and it's going to put too many guys at risk who are too young. You banged out the minor leagues, which is your development system. You can't further put the guys who are actually going to be the next players in the game at risk. That's my main concern here. 2020 has been weird enough as it is. If it takes it making a wash in order for them to figure out the labor situation and get everybody healthy, I'd rather that than stop start a season two or three times in order to try to get a World Series in after an already, you know, just messed up schedule as is. I really hope they don't force this down their throats. I hope they can come to an agreement.
And look, there are certain people that every time I see baseball news, my heart just goes, ugh, and you're one of them. So, as always, you can read them on The Undefeated. Check out The Intersection with L. Duncan Thursday nights, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio. Clinton, I appreciate your time, your insights, man. Thanks so much for joining
us. Jason, great to hear from you, brother. Talk to you soon.
We're brought to you by My Computer Career Training for a Better Life. I think one thing that stands out to me the more I continue to think about all of the NASCAR conversation is it's, as I've said, and I'll continue to say, on this microphone as often as possible, we have to stop looking at everybody else to affect change, and we have to start looking left and right. We'll see how NASCAR is capable of doing that over the course of the reaction from everything that happened this weekend. What I mean by that is if you're a driver, or if you're a NASCAR executive, if you're somebody that works within the sport, when we get the information on whoever's responsible for hanging a noose in Bubba Wallace's work area, when we get that information, how that is treated will give us a great example, idea of how everyone is handling it left to right. How are other drivers reacting to it? How are other employees reacting to it? How are the people at that same level in the sport reacting to the action? But the other part of it comes to the 20 or 25 fans and cars that are sitting outside flying their Confederate flag. We talk about what NASCAR is supposed to do there. What are we supposed to do as a society? How are we supposed to react? I think my real call here is for NASCAR fans to be passionate about it. If a NASCAR fan can look at another NASCAR fan and say, hey man, sport doesn't stand for that. If a NASCAR fan can look at another NASCAR fan and say, man, you're embarrassing all of us. If a NASCAR fan can actually do that, rather than just looking to the sport to make change and looking for how NASCAR is going to react to it, if fans can start holding fans accountable with the very simple premise of be better and do better, I wonder how much actual change could be affected. And this isn't just a NASCAR issue. This is a sports issue. If and when sports return in the fall, one of my main hopes is that all of us, when we finally get the opportunity to stand next to other fans, whether it's in a bar, whether it's socially distanced in your house, whether it's in a stadium, if it's in a parking lot, wherever it is, I hope that some level of what we've learned right now will help everybody look left to right and hold the people standing around them to a higher level of accountability. That is the way that all of us can begin to affect some level of change. Let's first take your take on ESPN Radio, ESPN News. We'll keep the conversation going, obviously, throughout the course of the day about everything that, we've learned in this process and what it means for NASCAR moving forward, of course. But coming up next, with the recent spike in COVID cases, should the NBA even be considering coming back? We'll you'll hear what First Take thinks, but first, summer means cool drinks from your fridge, beach towels from your dryer, and ice cream sandwiches in the freezer. Good God, that sounds delightful. The Home Depot can help you make these memories with special buys on the latest appliances, and you can get your new appliances delivered for free. So if you're not comfortable going out, don't worry about it. They take care of it. So start summer. The Home Depot. How doers get more done. What are they going to actually get done in the NBA in Florida? You'll hear what First Take thinks next. First Take, your take. ESPN Radio, ESPN News. First thought, First Take, your take. Good that I know the name of the show. On ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, Sirius XM Channel 80, and ESPN News, I'm Jason Fitz. We'll take your take. I'm interested to hear what you guys have to say about the NBA. 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. A lot of conversation that we're going to have today, but the next conversation that I want you to hear is about the NBA specifically, as they're trying to figure out what to do. Look, let's not get it twisted. One positive COVID-19 test shut down not just the NBA, but the entire world of sports, right? Like, all sports shut down. I was hosting ESPN Daily the night that the NBA shut down, and we were getting ready to be done with the episode, and all of a sudden, bam, the Rudy Gobert test positive. We retape everything. I remember the night that the NBA shut down over one test. Now we're in a world where suddenly you have, what, 30-plus players from LSU that have tested positive for it? You have 28 players around Clemson Athletics that have tested positive for it. We're seeing dozens of cases across the college football landscape, and everybody's saying, well, yeah, we'll figure it out. In fact, when Dr. Alan Sills, the chief medical officer of the NFL, was on Golic and Wingo, he said that the NFL will have to adapt to COVID-19 because COVID-19 won't adapt to the NFL. None of that says cancel. And we have to understand that the NBA is looking at coming back together for a playoff in an area, Florida, that's getting hit harder than ever before. Now, let's be real. If we invented a time machine and took today's results and put it back to what we were experiencing in March when the shutdown started, people would be absolutely losing their mind at the concept that we'd even be bringing sports back. But instead, it looks like, and no matter what the risk is, at some level, everybody's just plowing forward because there's this sense that, well, we've just got to get back to normal. So the question is, should the NBA even be thinking about coming together? This guy wants you, before you guys chime in, 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. Should the NBA consider getting back into action? I'll take your take on it. But first, let's get some Straight Talk brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. And it comes in the form of Stephen A., Marcus Spears, and Jay Williams breaking down whether or not the NBA should even be considering coming back to action in Florida.
No one can doubt the job that Andrew Cuomo has done as governor of the state of New York with this whole COVID-19 pandemic. Now, there are critics that have accused him of grandstanding, being on television entirely too much, even though I would submit to all of y'all his segments with his brother Chris Cuomo on CNN have been nothing short of hilarious the too few times that I've caught him. But let's be very clear. New York was the epicenter of the COVID-19 pandemic in the United States of America. They are now in phase two, starting today, where the city is reopening. In terms of flattening the curve, lowering the curve, and getting their bearings under them and moving in a forward direction. New York is what it's all about right now because of that man's leadership. There's no way around it, okay? And so when you take that into consideration and you consider the most the size, I understand density is an issue and what have you, but the size of New York City, the amount of hotels it has available to it, the fact that people have been in the streets but engaging in social distancing, wearing their masks, and not feeling strapped and damn near imprisoned in the process. If you take that into consideration and you compare that to what the governor has done in Florida, where you might have opened up a bit prematurely, you might have been too lax and might not have been as vigilant as some would say you should have been in enforcing some of the safety protocols and measures that would keep your state safe. And now we've got 23 different states that have spiked, and the state of Florida is one of the states that is obviously not had, they haven't had it too good as of late. I would say because of the leadership that you have here, the fact that it is New York, it's Gotham City, I think that would be very appealing to all parties concerned. I think it's something that should be strongly considered if Orlando doesn't work out.
Stephen A. Smith, there is no way that the NBA could pivot with less than a month. You're talking about a multi-billion dollar organization. Think about how much money it would take to then drop all plans to do it in Orlando, a multi-two-place facility, a built-in bubble to a degree, to then say, hey, we want to just do it in New York. You have to find a location. You have to find the right facilities as it relates to, you know, hotels. There's no way that pivot could happen. Okay, where are you going to have everybody stay at? How are you going to keep everybody in an enclosed environment?
I mean, don't get me wrong.
I hear what you're saying. I hear what you're saying. The thought sounds good. It sounds good, but is it realistic? There's no damn way it's realistic. You can't pivot that in a month. Now, I understand, like Reid Hoffman has said, he's the CEO of LinkedIn, that sometimes you have to jump off the cliff and assemble the plane on the way down. But this is too detailed of a plane to assemble after you jumped off the cliff on this one. Now, there are a lot of things that worry me about Orlando. Obviously, you know, Disney allowing employees to go in and out and them not being as frequently as tested as players should be. But I'll tell you this right now. I've talked to a lot of players. I live here in Brooklyn. I don't see players leaving their other locations to come here to Brooklyn or to New York to play in the game. And if I'm a player, I'm leaning towards not playing. I'm sitting there watching, oh, since Saturday, there's been 4,049 cases that have happened, regardless of whether you want to tell me testing has increased or, you know, I don't care what the damn reasons are. I have to leave my family for 2.5-3 months and I'm supposed to be in a bubble and now we're going to change locations in the last month? I'm leaning towards not doing this if I'm a player. And, if you know, a lot of players are going to be put in this situation. A lot of players may play because they need the paycheck. But if you're a player in a good situation financially, I don't know if I want to just deem myself to assemble in the plane on the way down, especially watching how all these case numbers are rising, regardless of whether you tell me it's, you know, testing is going up or, you know, people are just getting, you know, more cases in general. I'm scared. You should be scared if you're a player. I've heard multiple players say that, Stephen A.
First, take your take on ESPN Radio, ESPN News. This is interesting to me because as much as you just got the Straight Talk Wireless, everything for less only at Walmart from the guys, as they take a look at the situation for the NBA return, like, tell me how, if you're just looking at COVID-19, if that's the only factor in this decision, take business out of it, take dollars and cents out of it, take money out of it, take your want for sports. Just look at the facts in a bubble. If the league shut down because it didn't know how to handle COVID-19, what do we now know? I mean, what did I miss that we've learned so much that we know everything there is to know about it at this point so we feel safe about it? Is it that, or is it that we frankly are trying to treat COVID-19 like at the Macarena, like we're ready to move on? Now, I understand that there's going to be conspiracy theorists about what this means and who's promoting that and why this is all going on. Look, I'm not here for any of that conversation. What I'm asking you is, if COVID-19 was worth shutting the NBA down in March, how can we possibly look at the results right now and say it's worth bringing back, other than the fact that we want it. All I want is transparency in this. Like, for fans to step up and just admit, hey, you know what? I want it. So since I want it, it should come back. Everything's got to come back at some point. That's been the argument. Jeremy in Hawaii, we'll take your take on it. Jeremy, what's your take? Should the NBA come back to Florida?
Hey, good morning, Jason. Thank you for having me. No, they should not definitely go to Florida. Absolutely not.
So what should they do?
I believe that the place to be is in Hawaii. I know that logistically that doesn't make sense, but safety-wise, we have a two-week quarantine before anybody can leave their hotel. The bars are all open. Dude, the west side is the best side. Talk about a bubble. There's a bubble in New Zealand. They just had a rugby match with like 20,000 fans in the stands. You know, I think Hawaii is the place.
Look, Jeremy, I'm not going to argue with you, especially if I can somehow finagle that assignment. Like, if I can find my way to the, please God, I mean, we need a digital show to cover this thing, right? Like, I'll just go host it if we're going to Hawaii. I feel like the players would be all in for this discussion too, right? You just privatize a certain section of beach and just make sure that they hang out in Hawaii. I mean, I'm going to be honest. Like, the thought of Hawaii sounds good. I'm just not sure that it's right to get everybody back together in general. I don't know the answer to this. Steven in Tennessee, what's your take?
So I see no issue with it, assuming that they handle it correctly in Florida, and here's why. So if we look at what Tony Khan of the Jacksonville Jaguars Khan family has done with his organization, AEW, what he does is he runs weekly episodic shows there for that sporting event, and every single person that comes in there, whether they be a performer or a crew member, are being tested before they gain entry into the venue. He's had zero cases with this, running this out of Jacksonville, an area with a high number of cases, and has been able to do this without having to shut down. So as long as the league takes that same amount of precautionary work, making sure to stay up on testing, not letting people enter until it's guaranteed they don't have anything, then the league can continue on as long as they want to. It just all comes down to how serious they take it.
Well, Steven, I like your take. Stick with me for 1 second if you can. So AEW obviously is done in a more isolated way. Does it change your thought when you realize that, frankly, the NBA players, unlike the AEW guys, like, they can't go anywhere. They've got to stay where they are for months. Does that make it better or worse for you?
Once again, I think it comes down to how the league wants to regulate it. I mean, if the league wants to keep players staying in that location, doing all of the games out of their schedules at different times, I don't see an issue. Obviously, if there's going to be tons of travel going around, it does make it more difficult. But listen, the travel side of thing is something that we've all sacrificed at this point. So if the league really wants to make this as safe as possible, do keep people isolated in that area and just run games whenever you can. It helps bring in revenue. It's going to help keep the fans excited, and it's going to help keep the players and the staff members safe.
Well, look, and I don't disagree with everything you're saying right there. It totally makes sense. It's just hard for me to wrap my head sometimes around the fact that what they say, 5% testing, 5% of the NFL players, for example, have tested positive for it. And we're seeing these huge numbers out of college football. And remembering, a lot of these kids came from all over the country, and they're now coming together. And frankly, many of the people that are testing positive for COVID-19 are, in fact, asymptomatic. They don't even realize they have it at the athlete level. So, you know, I understand that there are variables to this that make it more difficult than just a black and white situation. And there, it's a very gray area of trying to figure out what's safe. However, if COVID-19 is really this, oh my God, monster that we all have to stay away from, I can't see any truly safe way to bring back sports. It's like what they're doing is saying, instead of saying, look, we're going to do this in a way that safety is first, what they're saying now is we're going to do this in the safest way possible, which means inherent risk. Now, some people are comfortable taking that risk. Others are not. What we have to make sure that we do throughout the process of it is respect everybody involved in these decisions on the NBA side or any sports side as they decide what they're personally comfortable with. But we also have to acknowledge that this is going to be a very difficult situation, especially if they manage to miss one positive test or have one instance that suddenly leads to entire teams being eliminated. Coming up next, more First Take, Your Take. What happens when an MMA fighter wants to stop the fight, but his corner doesn't let him? First Take reacted to it today. First Take, Your Take, ESPN Radio, ESPN News. First Take, Your Take on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, SiriusXM, Channel 80, and ESPN News. You can also get Fancy Pants and just ask your smart speakers to hang out with ESPN Radio. It gets you to us. I'm Jason Fitz. Don't forget, Dove Men Plus Care is proud to honor Nelson Cruz. He's the recipient of the 2020 Muhammad Ali Sports Humanitarian of the Year Award, Dove Men Plus Care. Today and every day, care makes the difference. Now, what makes the difference when it comes to care is specifically when we're talking about athletes and who's looking out for them. That's an interesting question because right now we've had so much of the talk about COVID-19 and we continue to have a conversation about health and safety. But health and safety also applies to guys that are on the field and guys specifically that are in the ring. That's why UFC has protocol. When a fighter wants out and a fighter can't continue, he's supposed to tell his corner, and this corner is supposed to end the fight. That's what makes a particularly exchange from over the weekend very, very interesting, because the Nevada State Athletic Commission is now looking into a controversial sequence of events that happened in a UFC fight between Max Roshkoff and Austin Hubbard. This is a little bit of the exchange with Roscoff and his trainer about wanting the fight stopped.
We got this, champ.
Fall out.
Listen.
Fall out.
Huh?
Fall out.
You're going to beat this guy, Max. We got this. Yeah. You're going to beat this guy. Listen, no, listen.
Rob,
no, you got this, Max. Okay? Stop it. We got this. Okay, yeah. Breathe. Okay, catch your breath.
No.
We're going to beat this guy.
Call
keep it in her feet. You're going to clinch.
No. Call it. Call it.
You sure you're going to lose, Max?
Yeah.
We got this,
I don't want to do this anymore.
No, we got this, Max.
No,
you're a champion.
I don't have it.
You're a champion. Stop it.
I don't have it.
Stop it. You're a champion. You're a champion. We're going to call it. Finish this round on top of him with precision, okay? Get on top of him. Out wrestle him. We got this.
He was heard saying call it 9 times during the 1 minute rest period between rounds. 9 times. And at some point, his corner refused to hear it. In fact, it was NSAC Inspector Chavez Foger who noticed that he wanted out. So he called on the referee and the cage side physician to ask him directly if he wanted to continue. That's when it was called. At some point, you got to look at who's protecting these fighters. And when the fighter turns around and says he doesn't have it in him, what happens? So Myron Metcalf, ESPN radio host, went off Sunday morning with some smart words I want you to hear about what should happen to Roscoff's trainer.
He should be suspended from training any fighter, from cornering any fighter going forward in the UFC. They should take his license, and he should have to apply for reinstatement after we figure out if he's ready to come back. But he put that young man in a position where he could have died. Now, everybody says, oh, no, he was just exhausted. That's not the point. He was done. And if you're done, you're saying, I can't defend myself. And if you can't defend yourself, then that's where you get into a situation like we had in 1982, Matt, where you had Ray Boom Boom Mancini fighting Duke Koo Kim on CBS Sports. And you know what happened in that fight? They went 14 rounds. And Duke Koo Kim, after that fight, after being TKO'd by Ray Boom Boom Mancini, died. He died on national TV. And you know what happened 3 months after that? His mother took her own life. And you want to know what happened 6 months after that? The referee in that fight, Richard Green, took his own life. And boxing went off network TV. People like Robert Drysdale will cause us to lose the entire sport. Robert Drysdale should be suspended from cornering any fighter in the UFC or anywhere else going forward. Suspend him now because he could have cost that young man his life.
Those are strong words, and they're accurate words from Myron Metcalf over the course of the weekend. Again, you've got a fighter here who was on short notice. He accepted the fight 5 days ago, telling his chief cornerman 9 times that he's done. He's out going into the third and final round, that he can't do it. And instead of his cornerman coming in and helping him, protecting him in this situation, he was trying to push him back into the ring. And yeah, you could say, oh, he's trying to help him find the next cure, whatever that reason might be in your mind why it would be acceptable. But I can't find one. I mean, I'm interested to see what the Nevada State Athletic Commission finds from this, because there isn't a middle ground on this. A cornerman is supposed to be protecting a fighter ultimately from himself. At some point, the person in your corner is supposed to be the one that says, hey, he's got so much drive, I'm afraid he's going to put him back out there and put himself at risk. For the opposite to be happening is such a blatant disregard for the health and safety of the person that's in there taking the punches, taking the hits, putting himself in danger. I don't understand how you could ever possibly let him back in a ring. I don't see how you can trust Robert Drysdale to take care of anyone when he had this opportunity and he didn't do his job. His most important job is to protect his fighter, and he simply chose not to do it. That is something I can't make sense of, and that is a reason why UFC needs to step in and make sure that he doesn't have the opportunity to hurt another fighter ever again. We're going to keep taking your takes as we continue, but Dak Prescott signed a big deal. Should he sign the franchise tender? You'll hear what First Take thinks next. First Take, Your Take, ESPN Radio, ESPN News.